Welcome to the ETOP Podcast with your host, Richard Walsh. I'm a 30-year business-owning veteran, creator of the ETOP Academy, and best-selling author of Escape the Owner Prison, the contract's new way to scale, regain control, and fast-track growth while loving life. My mission? To help 10,000 business owners create the freedom in their lives to do what they want, when they want, and still be massively successful. Now, let's hit our topic for the day.
All right, here we are on ETOP Podcast. We have got a couple of incredible guests today. This is going to be fantastic. I am, to say the least, super keyed up for this interview. It's going to be great. I've got Mike Cirelli and George Randall. They are the authors of The Talent War. All right, now we're going to get into this so you're going to understand what this is all about. Now, Mike Cirelli, a quick kind of backdrop. Again, former U.S. Navy SEAL, George Randall, Army enlisted all the way to officer, again with the teams there too. A lot going on here. This is going to be pretty exciting. They are a couple guys really bringing elite team principles to the business world. Okay, and again, as we get into this, you're going to see what all this means. They are both managing partners of EF Overwatch. That's their company recruiting talent, things like that. We're going to talk a lot about talent, obviously. So, as I always do, with no further ado, gentlemen, Mike and George, come on board. How are you guys doing today?
It's a good Friday for sure.
Yeah, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I am, like I said, keyed up about this. So well, here's what I usually do with all my guests, and we're going to do the same. Let's give each one of you whatever you need. Bring us up to speed. You guys have a long and storied past, okay, and accomplishments and stuff. So whatever, you can keep it light, you can go in depth, whatever you feel like doing, guys. But you know, the floor is yours. So Mike, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Born and raised in the Bay Area, enlisted in the United States Marine Corps shortly after high school. Became a recon Marine and a scout sniper. The Marine Corps sent me back to school. You know, the one thing that a lot of people don't understand about the military is they put a precedence on education and learning. In fact, the U.S. Army is the largest supplier of scholarships in the nation, but they don't show that in the Universal or Warner Brothers movies. After that, the Marine Corps sent me back to school. I switched over to the SEALs as an officer, served my last 15 years until retirement in the SEAL teams. Most of my time at an organization called the Joint Special Operations Command, which is an amazing organization. You look at it, the SEALs are an elite organization in and of itself. The attrition rate is anywhere between 80 and 90%. Well, take that 20 to 10% that make it into the SEAL community, the 3,000 of them, and then only 2% of that 3,000 has what it takes. It's a whole different assessment and selection process. And most SEALs fail. One out of 35 makes it to the next level, which is the Joint Special Operations Command. And that a lot of that assessment and selection was discussed in the book in a very careful manner. But George and I, after I left the military and retired, you know, met George, we're both passionate about not only assessing talent, but building elite teams. And then how do you just build world-class talent acquisition programs, as well as world-class leadership development and talent management systems to not only retain your talent, but continually accelerate your talent. And that is a lot tougher than people realize.
Yeah. And as far as me, yeah, oldest of four boys, you know, I knew I was going to pay for college. So I enlisted Army, reserves, went the ROTC route, commission, back pre global war on terror. So Cold War vet, spent some good time in Berlin and Africa, a few other places, jumped out after I commanded for 2 years. Found my way into talent acquisition. And like Mike just said, just all of a sudden discovered my passion for talent. So for 20 plus years, I've been in the talent acquisition space, leading very large global recruiting teams. And, you know, a little over 2 years ago, I heard this voice and connected with him on LinkedIn. And it was just the weirdest thing to kind of meet your counterpart as far as talent building elite teams and Mike. And real serendipitous meeting, and started working together, partnering, you know, working with EF Overwatch. And then Mike called me one night with this idea. You know, first it sounded, for the first 2 seconds, sounded crazy. He said, you know, we got to write a book. And it took me just a second or two, but I was like, yeah, we should. And then we, you know, got busy grinding, pounding it out. But we've both really geeked out for talent because we understand that talent's what drives everything. And it's at the heart. And if you don't get that part right, everything else is going to go astray for you.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, guys. I'll tell you, I have read The Talent War cover to cover, as I said before we started. It's an amazing book. And I will tell you, I haven't read something on the, you know, human resources level like this book. Okay. I think it's incredibly unique. I have the thing called ETOP Academy, right? So I business coach, I do all that stuff, same thing. And I will tell you after completing this, just get this out in the beginning, this is going to be required reading. Okay. For business owners. All right. This is, awesome. I'm not kidding. When you got, and we have very similar mindset as well on talent. It's so important in the business realm and the way you guys have dissected it. I know it's because you have, you know, extensive experience in this, but the way you dissected this in the book and broke it down, I know it's an overview, yet it's still incredibly detailed. You know, it's easy to say it's just a lot of talk, but I mean, I'm just so impressed by the progression throughout the book on what this is and what it means to a business that I try to articulate. I could never articulate it like this, but it's so important for businesses to understand this. So I want to talk about this. And it's, again, we could go on forever with this stuff. This is a huge subject. So like you guys kind of geek out and I'm kind of the same thing. Okay. So I've just, because I understand the importance of talent in a business. Again, so let's talk about that. If you guys want to, let's hit a starting point here. Just the reason, let's start with the reason for talent, right? Because there's one thing in the book that, you know, we'll come back to also is just when people just hire because they have vacancies, all right? And that's like it's just a bad way to hire, right? You're just hiring to fill a vacancy. So let's talk a little bit about that on the importance of going for the best talent.
Well, Mike, you want to lead off?
Yeah, Go ahead. Richard, you actually said something that, you know, a lot of business leaders just, and it's not their fault, don't understand this part of the process. What MBA program produces top tier HR leaders for the business world? How you know, there's not many MBA students that come out and step into HR. It's not a topic within your top Ivy League MBA programs. Yet it's one of the most critical parts of leadership is actually building the team and then having the ability to inspire people to the point where you retain them, you give them autonomy, growth opportunities, and ownership. And so a lot of business leaders just have to sort of fumble through this, and a lot of them don't put the necessary time to become good at it. So George and I understand that. Within Special Operations, the reason we wrote this book is because we understood it from the start. The founder of Delta Force, a guy named Charlie Beckwith, Vietnam war hero, who was very disruptive thinker, was the first to create the first counterterrorism unit in our nation. And he said he would rather go down the river in Vietnam with 7 absolute studs than just 100, as he called them, shitheads. Excuse his language. But he knew it's not about quantity. It's about quality of individual, quality of character, quality of work effort that pushes organizations forward. And when you don't approach this trying to build a systematic, repeatable process, you are just hemorrhaging money as a company. And you're basically just putting butts in seats and hope, which is not a course of action, just hoping that certain hires work out.
You know, what I would add to it, Mike, is just as always spot on. And sometimes I think we're thinking the same words and we wonder which one of us is going to say it. The interesting thing is that we put in the book is the only true competitive advantage that you could ever hope to achieve and maintain and sustain is your human capital, is talent, top talent. There's so many examples in the business world of people who've taken their eye off the ball and think the latest software or the latest that it's their product, that it's the service. It's all driven by people, and it can all get outdated so quickly. I mean, just the basics of taxi service, and look what Uber did to disrupt him. That was talent. That was ideas, and then people executing. You know. So there's just absolutely nothing more critical in 20 years in talent acquisition. We call what you described as butts in seats. And Oh, I've got budget. Oh, I've got a headcount. Oh, somebody left. I need to replace them. It's like replacing a part on a car sometimes. And it's absolutely so frustrating, because to the title of our book, that's what makes special operations so special. It's not the gear. It's not the high-speed night vision goggles, all of the tech that they have. It's the people. Pure and simple. That's it. You got to get it right.
Yeah, that's such a it can't be stated enough. The importance on this to me, from my first business I started 30 years ago, right out of the Marine Corps, is I built that as, it's interesting because I never thought of it this way. It's just the way I approach things, whether that was from the Marine Corps or whatever. But I kept my teams really tight and small. And I did a lot. And as I grew my business, I would do in a day, literally, I was a custom water feature builder, right? So I placed hundreds of tons of stone and do all this stuff. But I literally would do in a day what would take other companies 5 guys in a month to do, right? And I would just, that was just my approach to everything. So not only did it make me hugely profitable, but I became a leader in my field. And I never understood the need for like just bodies. For my thing was always, I don't need bodies. I need like really good people. I need to train them, and I try to get them. Again, you guys have taken it to a whole different level than what I had thought. But another reason why I love the book, because I'm like, well, this is how I did things, unknowing. I didn't put it down in paper like this. But I think that the need for the quality talent is just like you said, it's the only thing that's going to separate you in the marketplace.
Yeah, it's, one of the things, and Mike touched on it with the MBA comment, but most people don't recognize that the selection of a team is a subset of leadership. They just miss that part. It's labor. It's hands-on. They're missing so much in the understanding of the potential. And humans are the only thing that you can invest in and get exponential returns. The more you invest in top talent, the more you get, the more you can do, the more you can drive revenue. So if you're a leader, understanding how to select and build elite teams, that's more important than you figuring out the latest software for accounting or HRIS or any number of things. You get the people piece right, the rest of it will start to fall into place, or at least be one hell of a lot easier.
Let's, George, a good way, and for Richard, is to back into this, sort of reverse engineer this.
Yeah.
As a business leader, what is the culture we're all trying to achieve? And that is, and I'm going to answer my own question. This is the only form of culture we're trying to achieve, is decentralized command, which means as a leader, when I've arrived there, I know I can sit in my chair and say, I've got the right people in the right positions, solving problems at their respective levels or seizing opportunities in the market space. And I know I've got the right people, which allows me to take 5 steps back and make better strategic decisions for the organization. That is what all leaders want. But in order to get there, you've got to be very intentional about your culture and the people that you bring into that culture. And a lot of people want massive growth. When most people go into massive growth, and George wrote about this in the book with the butts and seats mentality, each single hire, I don't care if you're a 10,000 man organization, one hire has the possibility of diluting your culture in a matter of minutes by adverse, behavior or taking bad actions in the company name.
Yeah, Mike, I'm totally with you on that. I have, of course, been in business so long myself, 30 years, I've got experience with just that. Okay, so it's the bad. I think if you've been in business any amount of times, you've had your share of bad hires, for one reason or another. I think what you're saying there too on understanding what this, in the book you talk about the longevity aspect, right? You're building leaders, you're recruiting for the future. You're not recruiting for that right now, that vacancy. You may have a vacancy, but I think at the same time, like what you talk about in the book is knowing that this is for the future. It can't be just for a need now, because needs change. Business changes, especially today, so rapidly that you really need the talent. So if I can ask, let's talk about, because you talk about hiring for potential. Give us a little bit of insight on that and what that actually means, because I think it's a really important aspect when selecting people for a position. You go into great detail in the book on this, and I love that aspect of it because that's kind of what I always look at, same thing. And then, but then you've got the methods to develop it and everything else. So share that a bit with us.
George and I will definitely sort of dual hat this. So one, the default mode for all human beings is lazy. Human beings will always choose the path of least resistance. When it comes to hiring or assessing and selecting talent into the organization, if you have bad leaders conducting that hiring on your behalf, they're going to default to the lazy thing, which is objective measures like, oh, I've got a resume here, George Randall, who has 15 years of experience in HR. Just hire him into the role because he's got experience and I just want somebody to step into the role and perform and I don't want to have to train them or actually put any time or effort in. So a lot of people default, oh, he also graduated from University of Oklahoma, which is my university, so he must be good to go because only your University of Oklahoma only accepts people of my caliber. So it's those type of things that people usually default to. And they stay away from the subjective because becoming good at assessing talent for potential requires expertise. It does require scars as well. It requires talent in itself. A players select A players, B players select C players and below. I will tell you that the special operations community can't hire for experience. But so by nature, they were forced to become good at potential-based hiring. I can't step into a high school and say, hey, I'm recruiting for the SEALs who has experience in special operations. None of the young kids will raise their hand, but we are so good at assessing for character, character traits, for attributes. Our process is basically the longest behavioral interview in the history of the world. It's about 2 years of pushing them to their mental and physical limits because we know that's where true character emerges. And that's what you're trying to do during the business hiring process. I'll say this. I've been singing for about 20 years of my life. I sing in the car. I sing in the bathroom. I sing in the shower. I mean, I've got a lot of experience singing, but there are no record labels that are knocking down my door to bring me in. So experience tells you where somebody's been. It doesn't necessarily tell you where they're going. That's where character and attributes come into play. But a lot of people overly weight experience. And we all know there's good experience and there's bad experience. And ultimately the person and their attributes and character determines the difference between the two.
And Mike nailed it. I mean, potential-based hiring. And so putting it down, and one of the things that we tried to do in the book was take, you know, how special operations looked at it, which is experts over half a century refining this process of potential-based hiring. So putting it in the business perspective, for any of your listeners out there that are business leaders, hiring managers, et cetera, go back and look at your job description or the job description you were hired to and tell me how long that job description was valid. How long was it that you got in the job before it changed, before it modified, before you took on additional duties? So you have to understand potential because jobs are going to change. And in with the technology age that we're in, they change so incredibly fast. Additionally, think of it this way. And this is one of the things we went to great pains to put in the book. And we hammer it home on so many different podcasts, which is experience, those objective requirements that Mike talked about, is not necessarily predictive of success. So if you're thinking that your jobs that you're posting are not going to change and you think experience is predictive of success, you're in for a world of hurt. You have to be hiring the potential because your jobs are going to change. And the only thing that is predictive are the character traits, are the attributes that we talk about in the book. Now, experience somewhere might say, yeah, they have a better than average shot of doing well in this particular function, this particular industry. We're not dismissing experience outright, but it's not necessarily predictive. And Mike gave the great example. Oh, they're from the University of Oklahoma. I'm from the University of Oklahoma. They only produce great people. So I know they're going to do well. No university is predictive of success. Harvard, Yale, any Oxford, none of them are predictive of success. but the character attributes are. And the better you can be at selecting and assessing people with those attributes that define success in your particular role, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, a thing I gathered from the book too, as I read it, was the objective and subjective approach. You know, like you said, well, objective is very, it's standard. You've got this, this, and this. I never put it in, you know, set terms on the subjective aspect, right? Looking for the potential. You know, to me, that was like, well, that's interesting. I mean, I know I kind of do it internally because I'm listening, I'm talking to people, but I didn't really, I never built a system around it, you know, where you guys are like laying out the system. I love it.
Well, I'll give you a weird example. This is crazy. And I do it with veterans because we coach a lot of veterans because there's a little bit of muscle memory about how they lead. But over the last 10, 15 years, I'm usually in the interview panel for the executive C-suite or level two, right? The one click below C-suite. Richard, you know the hardest question? I when I'm interviewing those executives, there is no doubt about their success. There is no doubt on the resume that this, for all practical matters, looks like a superstar. Do you know what the most difficult question when it comes to subjective assets, the hardest question that stumps most of them? It's, tell me about your leadership style. How do you lead and build teams? What is the how? What are the subjective traits that I'm listening for? And it's like standing in front of your wife when she asked you a question. The longer you talk, the more guilty she knows you are. That's what happens 98% of the time when I ask that question of executives. They don't know how. They don't know the attributes about themselves that have created the success that they put on their resume. And it's stunning because it's those attributes that count. We know what the results are, but how did you get them? Because how, each environment is different. Wherever they got those accomplishments, now you're in a new environment, it's not necessarily predictive. And we talked about that in some book. You draft choice goes to the New England Patriots and they soar. Put them on another team and they fail. There's so much of the environment and the attributes that matter.
Yeah, that's a very strong point. I was thinking very similar, you know, when you, just whether it's coaches or players or whatever, the same thing. You've got the one coach on a football team, he's losing, wins three games in a season, they fire him. Next year he's on a team, they go to the Super Bowl, literally.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's like, it's, you're like, how could this even be possible? You know, so again, that's, it's, but then what I'm so impressed by is, you know, creating a system, like you're saying, to actually be able to do this. Right. Like you say, like one thing in the book you talk about that I love is you train them to interview. Right. Mm-hmm. This is a really important thing because nobody's doing that. I don't know anybody who's training people how to be a good interviewer. You know, that just, it seems like such a, it's not even an afterthought. It's non-existent.
I've been through, and we have this great member of our team, Carly Walden. And, you know, Mike and I went to great pains to, well, it's not great pains to hire smarter than us, but we had this amazing leader in Carly Walden. And she was on a podcast and she brought up a really important point about how many times she's interviewed for a job. And she'll go through five people and she will get multiple versions of the exact same question. And so so you absolutely, Mike made the point that's absolutely critical. A, players, you know, select A players, B players, select B players, C players, whatever the cat drag in, that's who's going to be in the seat. But even though they're A players, you have to train them. And interestingly enough, of course, there are all those equal opportunity. There's a lot of things that you can and cannot ask about. It all has to be about the job and the requirements and the, you know, of the job, the attributes for success. But you absolutely have to train your people. And Mike, I mean, Mike is great at so many things, but he still trains at those things to keep getting better. You know, professionals train until they can't get it wrong.
Love that one.
Yeah, Mike, I noticed in the book, you know, for both you, okay, we know being, you know, you're constantly improving, right? We're constantly learning. You're constantly honing your skills. If you're going to master someone, you know, the old adage is 10,000 hours, you know, to become a master. And whether that's, you know, legit or not is irrelevant, right? I was a boxer, right, for a long time, champion boxer. I mean, two workouts a day, every day. I'm getting fights. I do the whole thing, just getting going, 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 losing, winning, doing everything else. Anything, any craft, anything you're doing, you know, in the construction industry. is craftsmen, right? These guys, they start as an apprentice, they learn, they hopefully continue to learn and understand this process. But when it comes down to teaching the interview process, which you go into great detail on the book on this, which I really enjoyed, because again, they're not, you know, every business is a little bit different, but understanding the process, right, to discover these things about your candidate, you know, was really interesting. You know, you talked about character being one, and that's something I really want to explore in this interview, because it's a big deal, right? And it's something, talk to us a little bit with Mike or George, either one of you, about when you're searching talent, okay, and this, what, because I'm truly curious on what you're actually looking for, and is this a learned character, is learned, it's taught, it's innate, what's your guys' position on that?
Well, you know, to answer the question of what we're looking for, that depends. You know, from a business context, am I hiring an engineer? Am I hiring somebody into sales? Am I hiring somebody into a general management position? Each of those right there are going to require a different talent profile and a whole set of attributes to be successful. Where an engineer may not be engaging with clients or other people as much, you know, maybe collaboration isn't as important as an attribute, but they have to have high self-accountability and drive because they're going to be working as an independent contributor. That's just an example. So before we even engage in the process of looking at talent, you've got to know what you've got to define what success looks like. And George actually talks about that quite a bit. But the whole nurture versus nurture argument, you know, we don't get into that. Can you change somebody's behaviors? Absolutely. Is it harder in a grown adult? Absolutely. But, you know, there's a lot of kids that step into SEAL training, or as you know, the Marine Corps boot camp, that were classified as troubled kids. But the Marine Corps looks at them different and says, yeah, that's what normal people would say. They'd look at this kid and say, he's a troubled kid. We look at this kid and we see a lot of potential. He just thinks outside the box. And parents don't really enjoy, or schools don't enjoy, kids that think outside the box all that often. That's not a trait that schools often celebrate. So you've got to see that the kid has rock solid character, integrity. And if you can potentially show him the right way of doing something, or her the right way of doing something, they have the potential, they show or demonstrate the potential to relearn, to learn and be part of the team. That's someday I'm going to bring on board. But again, what I would look for in a U.S. Marine is wildly different than what I'd look for in an Army Green Beret or a Navy SEAL. So it depends on ultimately what the destination is.
Yeah, that was really important, is that people need, even when it comes to character and attributes, like Mike said, you're hiring for so many different profiles. The biggest hiring mistake is not understanding what success looks like, what you're interviewing for. But a simple trick, and you know, I won't give away all of our secret sauce, but Mike and I are pretty good about putting people in a twist. We'll give you an example. If somebody comes in, they're expecting to talk about their resume and their accomplishments. They're not expecting to talk about who they are. And just think back of how many people you've interviewed. You interviewing and you interviewing with other people, has anybody ever asked you a question about integrity? People just take that one for granted in the interview. But it's an absolutely black and white, non-negotiable thing. I think Enron figured that one out. That's a shining example of where integrity matters. But nobody asks about the character attributes. When executives come to me, or when I'm interviewing people, I do not touch any of the bullets on their resume. Matter of fact, I don't even need to look at their resume. What I need to be asking about is who they are, why they do things, what drives them, what do they value, what are the attributes that got them through. So my interviews are always focused on character throughout, and making sure they understand what is it about themselves that led them to achieve the things that are on their resume. I don't even need to see the resume. I absolutely do want to understand the candidate, but it's not necessarily required in order for me to conduct an interview and ask about character attributes, because that's all that I care about. That's all that I care about when I'm interviewing people. And especially for executives and leaders, Mike said it earlier, and it's one of the most important things that people need to understand in business, and we understand it by nature in the military, is under stress, skills degrade. It's the attributes that come through. So if you're not evaluating for those, if you don't have a system and you're not digging into integrity, learning agility, you know, emotional intelligence, effective intelligence, resiliency, drive, curiosity, all of those things, if you're not asking questions about those to elicit responses that tell you if they have that attribute or not, you'll be just one of the crowd asking more and more questions, and they'll get to brag about themselves, and you'll default back to the lazy, which is the objective requirements and whether you like the person or not.
Before you even engage in this process, Richard, you know, we're talking about, well, how as a business leader should I, you know, focus on identifying the attributes that I need for this organization? Well, hey, take a step back. Tell me about your culture.
Yeah.
A business leader who has not been intentional about setting their culture, a leader who just threw some words on the wall like integrity, communication, respect, and excellence. And oh, by the way, those were the same words that were on the wall in the lobby of Enron. If you're not living those day-to-day behaviors, you shouldn't even be looking for talent in the first place. You need to look in the mirror and fix yourself. So if you just jump into the talent process without setting your culture or truly have the ability to articulate what you stand for and then show it in your day-to-day behavior, you're just going to become a revolving door of talent if you hire good people in. But I hope the talent actually trying to get in there is assessing you as well and should identify that, wow, these people don't have their leadership foundation set. This is not a company I want to work at. Interviewing is a two-way street. Same with trying out for the SEALs. If we had a bunch of unethical instructors in charge of training, do you think the young SEALs the young candidates who have dedicated to potentially giving 2 years of their lives to make it through that pipeline are going to want to continue? Absolutely not. So this is just not a business saying, hey, how do we find talent into our organization? The process starts with looking in the mirror and first identifying again what your culture is, and then actually creating those talent profiles that you're looking for.
Yeah, that's so important. You know, I know you talk about in the book too, you know, you gotta, as leaders, you can't just talk it, right? You gotta walk it. You gotta be it. You had talked about in there, same thing, right? When you've got the Forest Recon guy, right? Who was an inspiration to you. You want to be like that. Like we all saw it, right? I mean, we go into Marine Corps because we're seeing these cool commercials, these guys who are just, you know, they're the epitome. Guys I've met, same thing. You know, you want to be that person. Right. So if they're going to come into your organization and the first line they meet, your interview or whatever, is not, they know if you're legit or not. Right. If you're not yeah, representing, you know, what's on the wall, like you said, Enron didn't. Right. It all looks good on the wall. I don't care if I hang a poster. Like, motivational sayings don't get me motivated. OK, you can't motivate the unmotivated. Right. You got to be what you are. It's important. You know, when you talked about integrity, George, I'll go back to when at MEPS, right? Right before you go into the Marine Corps, this captain, we are in all the room where we're going to do the swearing in. He gives us a speech on integrity, asking us what it is. Trust me, there was like no one could answer it. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. 17-year-olds. I'm like, is it being honest? And he's like, well, you know, then he gets into the whole thing. But that was 30 plus years ago. Right. And I still remember that. I still remember that question, you know, when he asked it. So it's a really important thing he brought up. I love that. But if you're not being like Mike, you're saying, if you're not looking in the mirror and being who you want, because I always tell people, you don't get what you want, you get who you are. Right. So if you're not that person, okay, you're going to get trash in the organization. You know, you're not going to get what you're looking for.
Yep.
So on the, one more thing on the character aspect, you know, as we build this, and I know we talked about it, you know, depending on the role, right? So you've got the different roles. And here's why I'm just so very interested in this character for a couple of reasons. One is I always like to have an understanding of it. Okay. I homeschool my kids for the reason, like you were just saying, we have a different thought process, right? Where I'm teaching them differently. So we decided to homeschool our kids for all these years, and it's worked out pretty well. I'm turning out some pretty cool kids, you know, in my opinion. I'm a little biased, you know, but that's how it is. But I'm trying to understand the development of character itself and going in there. Matter of fact, just as a side note here, in a couple hours, I'm interviewing a NBA coach, Brett Gunning, who's doing a whole series of children's books on character. because he's developing, you know, sports talent also, but he's, his focus is on character. So it's kind of a cool thing that we're doing this all in the same day. So I'm gearing up for the next conversation. But it's such an integral part, because like you said, under stress, okay, and business is stress, right? Your positions, there's going to be times when you got it, maybe you have rapid growth, maybe you've got issues you have to solve, and that stuff comes to the surface on this. So is there anything else on that that's a determinant of character, right? So like when you're seeing things, you know, again, I know maybe you already answered it, George, but you talked about the questions you're asking. Is that really your way of bringing that stuff out, is getting the answers to those questions like you had mentioned earlier?
Well, unfortunately, in corporate America, we can't do what the U.S. Navy does with buds and, you know, take them out and get them wet and sandy in the interview process. I mean, I guess you could, but you'd be incurring a little bit of legal risk there. So the challenge that you have is you only have questions. You know, some other ways that you can do it is certainly role playing certain scenarios that your company faces, whether it's with clients, whether it's with poor performers, role-playing things, asking people to do, giving people an exam, or, you know, what we call give them a business problem that you have, redacted, mind you, and tell them that we've tried every way since Sunday to figure out how to do this. I want you to, you know, in your second interview, come back and present your solution to something. The idea is to figure out the character attributes. You have to usually create a little bit of stress, a little bit of nervousness. And unfortunately, questions and role playing, you know, and projects to give them are really the only legal ways that you can do that in an interview. But you can gain so much by nailing those questions, getting them to elicit the most authentic responses. And frankly, you know, I know that this sounds odd, but one of the great things about special operations is they purposefully try to get people out of their comfort zones. That's what you have to do in the interview process. Most people, to some degree, can talk positively about themselves. I mean, there's plenty of people, bad interviews we've done where you're just, but you have to even be careful. Even if they can't articulate it, they may still be a great A talent. You know, you've got to watch for all your biases. But you have to get people out of their comfort zone by asking challenging questions. And when we go back to the integrity one, when I talk to execs, I'll say, okay, when you were a VP in this role or any of these roles, I want you to walk me through a time where you had to tell the CEO bad news, where if you told the CEO bad news that you were going to have negative ramifications, tell me how you handled that. Just something as simple as that, and you'll watch for the parts of integrity come out. You can seriously just sit down, write questions that will put people under pressure and get them out of their comfort zone and require them to think. And once they're thinking, unscripted is when you're going to get the raw attributes or the raw behavioral descriptions that tell you whether they fit this role or not and the success factors.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I'm just, you know, because you guys talk about in the book, you know, creating this interview process, mm-hmm. right? And understanding this. And it's so important because, again, people aren't trained to interview, right? So that's why I want to just kind of get into the, you know, kind of the mindset of this and what they have to create. Let me ask you guys, do you, with EF Overwatch, I know you're, you know, recruiting, you're supplying this excellent talent. Do you also have training programs for companies so that they can create these processes, or is it so individual that they kind of got to do it on their own? Is there a general scope or not?
100%. 100%. So hey, yep. Are we an executive search firm? Do we find amazing leaders to place into senior leadership roles in companies, as well as HR leaders who have this same aggressive approach to building elite teams? But what George and I are passionate about is we don't want you to rely on us for all of your, you know, leadership, hires. Is building out the systematic, repeatable systems in your company to set you up for success. And that's really where we come in and have the most impact on companies. George?
Yeah, we've had, because of the book and because of the leaders that we've been selecting and placing, companies have come back to us and said, okay, how do you do this? So Mike Carly, myself, a gentleman named Tom Lokar, PhD, who is cited in our book a lot. We are able to go out to companies and help them build repeatable, reliable talent acquisition processes, performance management, a whole suite of things that is all centered around the principles in this book. Yes, so we can go teach people how to do it. And Mike's right. One of the most I want to be very careful here, but we're very glad and grateful that companies come to us for us to place great leaders, and we get repeat work all the time. But there is a part, and we talk about it in the book, and I think Mike voiced it because it was so powerful, where if you're always hiring from the outside and you don't have a system that recognizes the talent within your company to challenge them, it becomes really, it's insidious. It's very, very harmful to your culture that you don't have an internal process. So not only do we look at building a process for you to look externally when you do have talent gaps, when you don't have that in the company, but part of what we do is to say, okay, how do we look at your company and assess the talent gaps you have? And, you know, Mike's done a number of things. He's an exceptional coach to help people develop leaders in the company. So we do a lot of train the trainer, building the processes, and helping people look at their company through the lens of the principles we talk about in the talent war.
Yeah, that is, okay, that's what I wanted to hear. Great answers. Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot of people who give you the, you know, you get a recruiter and they just send you bodies and everything else. And it just, it is the revolving door. It's endless. And I've seen it in big companies. Okay. I work with them. Like, wow, this is like, you're literally, you have a 519% turnover in last year.
Oh, I've been in those and it's ridiculous. There's so many things. And Mike and I could brag about this amazing young team that we have that we all work together, but there's two things that are really, really, or a couple of things that are really important. Number one, is Mike and I recognize that the U.S. military, as powerful as it is not the most powerful force in the world. The U.S. economy is. And we gauge success not just by the leaders that we're transitioning from the military, the veterans that we're placing in key critical leadership positions, but we go back and overwatch with the leaders of that company, with the candidates that we placed, because we are wedded. We really want the success of those companies we're replacing people. This is not about collecting fees. This is about driving the U.S. economy forward. So when we started building out the consulting arm, it's because we don't want to come in there and spider web like most of the consulting firms that you'll see. Honestly, we want your company to be successful. That starts with leadership. That starts with talent. So we are very much invested in the success of every one of our clients. And it's a bar that Mike and I keep very, very high to make sure that the value that we're driving for any client is 10, 12, 15X of the leaders that we place in there and the advice that we give.
Yeah, that's to have them see. Now that's real mission right there, right? That's not just not filling a gap. That's what I do. So I will escape the owner prison, right? So my mission is to help 10,000 business owners escape the owner prison, right? To learn how to delegate, to learn how to, you know, free themselves from the everyday tasks and all this stuff. Same thing to build that. So I need that mission, right? I'm very mission focused that way. Otherwise I'm not real interested. Okay. So I really got to have real purpose behind it. And I think that's really important to understand with you guys, because it's a different level. You know, you're not a recruiting firm. You know, in the lower sense of the word, you know, it's a much higher purpose to what you guys do.
You know, Mike and I, and I would say, you know, in my industry, but I I'll let Mike speak to it. Our reputations have been everything our entire careers. And that doesn't change because we are in a for-profit business at all. Our reputation goes with every candidate. It's the difficulty about this function is that every time we place a leader, we've planted our brand, we've planted a seed there. And we want that thing to grow. We want that company to win, attack and win in the space that they're in. So every time we place a candidate, every time we work with a client, it's Mike and I's reputation. And we've worked hard for 20, 30 years each to maintain a very, very high bar. It's everything to us.
Yeah, that's it's standards, right? We got to set these bars high. I don't think what I've experienced working with a lot of business and stuff, and you see a lot of different levels of the bar. Okay. I'm always trying to encourage that the bar keeps going up. You know, again, another reason why I enjoyed the book so much, because from the get-go, you see a high bar standard. All right. So you have a great expectation in the book for me, right? I look and I go, okay, this is going to be, I'm a little more familiar with what you guys have done and been through and everything else too. But at the same time, I want a high bar, right? I want a high bar for my people that work for me, people I help. I want them to keep increasing it because I'm about delivering value, right? The only way you're going to deliver value is having that high bar, true value that people are going to come back for again and again, just like you did. Why I really appreciate not just you're giving great people, giving opportunities to great vets. They're coming out in the leadership roles and getting that, but then equipping these companies to be self-sufficient in this and learning the right way so that they can dominate their market space. Cause that's what we're in business for. We're in there to command a lead and keep it going forward.
Yep. I got to tell you, working with Mike, you want to talk about keeping your bar high? Work with Mike.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It goes both ways.
That's what it takes, though, right? It can't be one guy. I mean, that's kind of the whole team's principle, right? Same thing in the Marine Corps. I mean, you can start at the, whoever on the battlefield. You can start with a captain, work down to the private, right? I mean, the next guy's got to step up when one's taken out. You know what I mean? So if you can build a chain of command that way and just a leadership principle throughout your company, everyone's going to be contributing and functioning, be prepared to do above and beyond their roles, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. As we move through this, because there's a lot of great stuff in the book. We talk about one thing, like you guys, are you guys supplying, I think you said you were, the actual HR talent as well. Are you supplying that to companies if they're looking for someone for HR? And are you taking a unique approach to that because of your ultimate mission?
We've started to lean into that. Absolutely. It was a little bit of a demand that we didn't expect, but yes, we are leaning into it. We have a couple clients now that we're actually on search for HR leaders. And so you can imagine, the screening that they're going to have to go through to get past Mike and I to even be presented. But yes, absolutely. People are coming to us for HR leaders. And we've played, I think Mike, I know that we've placed some kind of chief people officers and chief leadership development officers. I know we've done that. And, the demand's been great. We've been able to provide some exceptional leaders across the board to a number of industries.
We've had companies come to us looking, they thought they knew what they wanted, and we brought them around to where they created chief leadership, or as George said, chief people officer positions, and really have changed their specific HR function to more of a compliance function, making sure that benefits are squared away, that they're in accordance with labor laws. But the chief people officer and the chief leadership officers are really in charge of building the team, training the teams, developing those leadership development programs. Why we've jumped into this is George, Tom Lokar, Carly Walden, Karen Clark, they know the difference between HR leaders that are going to come in and be transformational leaders for an organization and those that are just going to sort of stick within the compliance realm. So that's why I think EF Overwatch will become a disruptor in that space as well. When people think HR leadership, they're going to think EF Overwatch.
The reason I ask that, because, I love business, right? So just from talking now, we see the development of your business, right? What you may have initially started out and how you can expand, right? And that these are maybe it was predicted, maybe it wasn't predicted, but as businesses grow, you see new opportunities, right? And then you have to address these, and you still keep with your core principles, everything else. But again, I think it's a challenge for you guys to bring in someone, like you said, who's going to not just be the compliance person, but someone who's going to truly transform leadership. That's got to take a little bit of work, all right, finding those people and getting those people placed, right?
Yes.
It is. And I think, when we do place those leaders, all of the leaders we place, we're changing not just our corner of the world, but we're changing the trajectory of a lot of companies, which is you know, a big thing that we set out to do with the book.
Yeah, about that. You know, that's an admirable goal, right? That's a big, you're talking about, you guys could be possibly turning around some really big ships, right? I mean, you know, as you get, depending on the level you're working with, which is, I know all levels, but that can be an extraordinary challenging aspect to change that kind of giant groupthink, right?
It is. It's been challenging, but what's interesting is kind of the book paved the way for the people that are reading it. It's a little bit of an aha moment. Like, I haven't thought of it this way, but of course this is what we should be doing. But we do have still some people that, you know, it takes walking them through the value. And one of kind of Mike and I's slogans about how we approach kind of telling the story is, you should be treating your human capital with the same discipline, rigor, and focus that you do your financial capital. Yeah, a lot of big ships. We're finding that small to medium businesses for us, you know, those are things that we can change rather quickly, or excuse me, help change rather quickly. And it's a great thing.
Yeah, I see the need there, because then that's what I deal with, right? The small, medium sized businesses, that's who I'm helping the most. And yeah, you can do rapid change, you know, in those, because they're still agile enough and they understand. A lot of them have reached the point where they're pretty much at a wall. They don't know why, you know, and I think your book clarifies that from the leadership aspect, you know, the talent aspect, they start to understand. I deal a lot of the trades and service industries. So you can imagine there's a whole realm of, you know, things that they're dealing with. A lot of it's just bodies. You know, they do that because they get, let's take roofers. They just need someone to rip shingles off, you know, and that's an interesting industry in itself. But, you know, they're not really, you know, they don't understand that they can still get talent there too. You know, that I think the talent's on every level. I think you guys talk about that in the book too. And it's important to understand that, right?
One of the things is we've helped people build these teams and we talk about single points of failure. Every business, and this is part of the book, is that we talk about HR being the gateway to all the revenue, product, and service producing departments. It's the gateway. But a lot of things, matter of fact, I wanted to throw this in because it just irritated me the other day. I'm like, this is a brand new point that we will probably put in book number two. Is I'm listening and hearing all of my peers, generally friends in the talent acquisition space, they're all talking about the sales kickoffs that are going on. These big companies, these $1 million, of course they're virtual now, but these big sales kickoff. Well, there's this one company they learned about that's doing a business kickoff because the leader recognizes that it's an ecosystem. And now Mike could probably give you 1,000 examples of, no matter how great his teams have been, if you get a logistician or you get to a mechanic that, or a combo repair person who is not an expert in their field, who's not an A player, and your combo breaks down, it's an ecosystem. So whatever level, you have to have talent. And in Mike's world, the stakes, there are no higher stakes in his world where he's come from. And so he just has always driven home that point, especially with the team we've assembled here. It's just great people at every level because it's an ecosystem.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, the ecosystem aspect. And it does. I can take back, I had hired a project manager years back and thought he'd be great, you know, had the experience, had the qualifications. Okay. Came in 3 months later, my entire crew quit, just walked out on me. And I'm like, whoa, what happened? Had no idea. Right. And he made up some reason or whatever, and they're gone. Now you talk about, you know, that for me, again, being a small operation, you know, with some real talented guys I had spent years training, to leave, two problems, right? First, they didn't even talk to me. It's up and left because they figured, you know, well, he's the guy running the show. So I suffered through the next year, the rest of the season, everything else, just trying to hire people to get work done, you know, difficult. Well, they came back to me asking like, well, what's going on? I said, well, look, I realized that it was this project manager was just a piece of work, you know, but again, you're not out in the field with them and stuff like that. So got rid of him. Guys came back. It all worked out in the end. But at the same time, they went to another company who did the same type of work. And I said, how was that? They go, oh, it's the worst ever. homeowners yelling at us and stuff. You know, the owner didn't care how we got the job done. You know, we were dealing with water features and things. Things had to be level and perfect. And this guy didn't care. Right. So he's just a total stain on the industry. And I was like, wow. But it was a learning experience for me about, again, guys in leadership, right? Choosing the wrong people. I mean, I suffered, you know, I suffered from this. It was bad, but I learned a hard lesson there, you know, on how to interview, who to interview, you know, how to make sure that, you know, that person is fulfilling the role that I had hired him from. So it's really important to understand the, you know, what we're talking about here, you know, from leadership. And I think the big thing too, because you guys train leadership. I mean, I know, you know, there's some people who I'm air quoting here, natural leaders. And I don't know if that's really the case or not. You could probably talk that a little more, Mike, but you know, the training aspect of the continued training of the leadership is really an important role, right?
Yeah, let's be honest. No one has ever stepped into a leadership role without any mentorship or coaching and knocked it out of the park. We put SEALs or Green Berets or any of the special operations through 2 years of training before they show up to their respective teams. And even then, you know, while we've trained them in the science of war, we haven't trained them in the art of war. We've got to develop them as leaders. And we don't throw them into very senior leadership positions without having put them through an iterative training process in gradually giving them more responsibility. The job of every business leader, the second they get hired into their company, is to invest and pour into people as if they may be there for the next 20 years. Can people possibly leave your company? Absolutely. That can't happen. You've probably heard the old Henry Ford story, sitting in a board meeting and they were debating whether to train their people better. And somebody said, hey, what if we train them? What if we pay all this money to train them and they leave? And Henry Ford looked at all of them and said, hey, what if we don't and they stay? You can elevate a B player to an A player, depending on how much time you spend with them and how often you put them through that coaching and feedback and mentoring mechanism. George and I, he said we've got some young colleagues here, some subordinate leaders within EF Overwatch, fresh out of a university here in Austin, and none of them have ever served in the military. You know what we do? And for business leaders that say, I don't have the time to do this, you're 100% wrong. That is a lazy answer. But George and I, from 8:30 to 9 a.m. every day, except for Fridays, Friday's off, every day we run them through leadership training, either soft skills or the hard skills of the industry. We're developing them all. In fact, we went into financial intelligence from a personal level a few days ago. And we're going to, you know, tag on to that with a wealth manager from JP Morgan Chase. You should always be developing your people. Your legacy as a leader is how well you develop people and how well the organization succeeds after you leave.
Yeah, and that I totally agree. I've consulted with some companies where even the owners, you know, you talk about the A players, B players, who they want to see. You know, the worst case scenario is you get that owner or leader who just wants, you know, less people under him. I mean, less meaning less quality, right? He doesn't want to be outshone. You know, he's hiring. I was with one, and I'm heading the whole sales division there, and I'm killing it, but he's bringing in these people who just don't produce, but he seemed to have an affinity for these kind of people. And I'm like, well, I really kind of, you know, I've done triple their sales and I'm not even, you know, but you, so that's an important thing. I love that you're developing these guys daily. The financial aspect too is really important. You know, I mean, cause that's part of being the whole. Right. When you talk about in the book, the whole man concept, things like that, that's actually part of it. You know, that kind of stuff is really good. I love to see that. And that's definitely something to model in people's company. They should take the time to work with people. I love the daily aspect. That's great. But at least they got to have something in place for that. That's great.
Yeah. One other thing, because you said one word and I wanted to share back. Mike got this training thing in and they're eating it up. But what's interesting is because, you know, Mike and I have a high bar and the people walking in here, they're teaching us too. You know, to your point about that leader that had an affinity for people and would hire people only less than that person, you know, Mike and I, we talk about in the book, you better be hiring somebody better than you. That's the whole point. That's how we are going to sustain. That's how we're going to win in our space. And, you know, it's a very humbling experience, but we both do it every day. We have some just absolute rock star killers on this team. And we do these training sessions, but throughout the day, throughout the week, and Mike taught me a phrase, and he's probably worn out from me saying it over and over, but I think it's one of the best phrases, and I wish I had had it as a young officer, which is the best idea wins. And so as much as we're teaching these folks on our team, you know, we, in setting the example of humility as leaders, we want to learn from them. And oh my God, the stuff that's coming out of them for creativity and how we attack the market, how we improve preparing our candidates, how we dig into clients, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's what it's about. You know, I mean, I think that's what your book shows. That's what you guys talk about. You live it. You've got to be open to learning, right? You can't, I always tell people, my clients too, I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm the smartest guy in the room. Got to find a new room, right?
I got to go.
Because, you know, I mean, I like to lead, but I don't want to be the genius all the time. You know what I mean? So, and that's not overly hard. I can always find another room where I'm not the genius. It's not a super difficult task, but I just make it be known that, you know, I've learned from my young, you know, egocentric self, you know, who thought he knew everything and wouldn't accept help. It took quite a bit of hurt to make me realize that, man, you need to ask, you need to get the help. You need to reach out and bring on the experts, right? Get those people working for you who are better than you. Because like you said, there's no way your company's going to excel if you're hiring a bunch of B players. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, you're going to be stuck in the mud. Okay. You're going to go nowhere and you actually lose because there's no real maintenance. It's either forward or backwards. So, you know, B and C players are going to drag the company down on many, many levels. So that's really important to understand. Let me ask you one last thing here. Well, let me ask you both, you can each respond to this question. So give us from your book, from your guys' experience and stuff, give us a good kind of your wise sage advice, a good point just going forward that people need to consider. Not only we know they're going to get the book, they must do that. That's a must. So anyone listening has to pick up the book. Okay, again, in my academy, it's going to be required reading. All right, but give us a tip on just, you know, what they really should be focusing on here right from the beginning, right? What's the biggest takeaway for them?
You want to go first, Mike? You want me to tee off?
Yeah, good. George, is probably the same one you have. Is one, you know, you read this book, and what was the thing we wanted to accomplish from somebody picking up this book? And it was a very serious conversation with other leaders within their business to say, okay, how are we doing compared to this book? And usually the answer is like, not well. And that's fine. It took special operations over a century and a half. That's how old special operations is in the United States, to develop the program they have today. And guess what? It's still evolving with each day. Is for leaders to sit down and do that hard look in the mirror organizationally and do an assessment based off this book, and then slowly identify the areas, the weaknesses, or what we call areas for growth that you need to make changes. And then don't boil the ocean overnight. Take small iterative steps to start creating a talent magnet within your company. And then after you get that talent, you better have a game plan for how to develop them. But it starts with the conversation and a personal assessment.
Yeah, it's always hard to go behind Mike because he nailed it. He absolutely did. I'll go back to, you know, the quotes that we use, which is, you know, to add on to Mike's comment, which is treat your human capital with the same discipline, rigor, and focus that you do your financial capital. And people out there that are in big businesses, and you've probably done more than your fair share of quarterly business reviews, which amount to death by PowerPoint and death by Excel when you're sitting in the briefing room. Could you imagine just for a second if your company, if you sat down once a quarter and went through your talent? Where do you have gaps? Where are you not winning? Where are you? Do you have single points of failure? Where do you not have number twos, number threes? It is an iterative process, but it starts with looking at your company. and putting it on the same level as how you measure your revenue, your expense, all of those things. Because talent, is it an expense? Absolutely. But it's your only and biggest source of revenue, and it's the only competitive advantage you can hope to maintain.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with both of those. It's important. I love just bringing this to light. Again, I'm just praising the book, guys, because it's something that business owners need to get in their hands, for one, you know, and just understand it, you know, because it's very eye-opening. Again, it's articulated, it's put into a perspective that you can totally understand, and you can see how to apply it. You know, again, as my small and mid-sized business focus, this is the ideal. This is that competitive advantage that everyone's looking for. And again, like we've mentioned, they think about it's a product or a service or something. It's not. You know, your competitive advantage is your people. You know, I had done a survey about, you know, what's your best asset in your business. You know, a lot of people would chime in, people. It was good. I went one step further. I put it as you, the owner, as the number one asset, because nothing's happening without you. But obviously, people are just that, right? But you got to, like you said, Mike, you got to look in the mirror. You got to start with yourself, right? You got to understand where you're coming from and how you're going to, you know, put this stuff in play. Are you the real deal? Are you walking the talk? So this has been just awesome. Guys, we could go on, because I think we got through about 25% of the book here, you know, today. So there's so much of it. And it's just been a pleasure doing this, man. This is so needed in the industry. You know, so I truly appreciate what you guys are doing, and I love the time you've taken to share it with my audience, for sure.
Well, we can't thank you enough for having us. You know, we continue to spread the good word. This was truly a labor of love and passion to get it done. And you know, thank you to all of those people buying the book, connecting with us on LinkedIn, or finding us, you know, at EF Overwatch and the Talent War Group. But hats off to my co-author. I could never imagine accomplishing something like this without him and bringing to life what we think is so important today.
Yeah, I would agree with George. And, you know, the fact that we connected through one of the most powerful platforms on earth in terms of business connections, it was fate. And the fact that we're very like-minded on the subject and passionate, you know, the book was something we're both very proud of. Can we have done it better? Absolutely. We'll never be content with it. That's what I guess we'll have to reflect in the second book, which will be all about leadership development programs and talent management. But that's right around the corner. We got to start working on that soon.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah. Keep going, guys, because it's needed. So on that, let's, of course, I'll put all this in the show notes as well, but I know George, you just mentioned some of the links and stuff, but give us kind of the direct way these guys can follow you, get in touch with you. I'll have all that put in the show notes as well, but just go ahead and share that directly.
Yes, absolutely. EF Overwatch, you can find it efoverwatch.com. That's the executive search and talent advisory firm. We also run something called Talent War Group, which you can find at www.thetalentwar.com. We're producing leadership content through 40 exceptional business leaders who, a lot of them so happen to be former military leaders or special operations leaders. And if your company has a gap in HR, we can help fill that gap by coming in and doing sort of what we call a talent diagnostic and start making the necessary changes to make your company competitive within your respective domain.
I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, I'll put all that stuff in the show notes. But I do love the EF Overwatch website. It's just sleek. It's cool. Move. So you guys done a nice job on that too, just for, you know, just to throw that out there.
Thank you.
I like it. Checked it out. So very cool. So yeah, guys, thanks again, man, for the time. I appreciate it. I know you guys are super busy. Just giving us some time here to share this. And again, the Talent War, man, people got to get it. It's a must read. Absolutely. So thanks again, fellas. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the ETOP podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked what you've heard, please leave a great review for us. Your subscription and review helps us reach more people so we can show them how to escape the owner prison. Also, check out the links in the show notes about today's guests and more ways to connect with ETOP on social media. Stay strong and keep moving forward with your business.